Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host, and the most important movie ever released in the history of the world starts its run this weekend, and it's almost certain to remain atop the box office until next month's most important movie in the history of the world comes out. I'm speaking, of course, of the Avengers Infinity War, which, if you think about it, will be a screaming disappointment if it grosses less than $1.5 billion or so. I mention all this because we close this work week with a discussion of movies. I am your host, Cy Killett, as I said, and you, if you would like to be part of the conversation, give us a call, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Deacon Stephen Gradonis, the creator of DecentFilms.com and the film critic for the National Catholic Register. He's also a member of the New York Film Critics Circle and a permanent deacon in the Catholic Archdiocese of Newark. Deacon Stephen Gradonis, thanks for being with us.
Cy, it's great to be here.
So, Infinity War, it's got the word infinity right in it, so you know it's going to be big. Have you seen it?
I have, and you're certainly right. It's going to be huge. We are living in the age of the superhero blockbuster, and 10 years of Marvel dominance in the marketplace has brought us to this moment. This movie has the Avengers. It has the Guardians of the Galaxy. It has Doctor Strange. It has Spider-Man. Literally everyone you know is going to see this movie.
Yeah, literally. But, okay, so is now, you, as you said, we live now in the age of the superhero movie blockbuster. DC is making them, and we get an occasional Warner or somebody makes the monster movies there. I don't know, but is this a good thing that we're living in this age? Are these good, healthy entertainment, or what do you make of it?
You know, I think it's mixed, and it's going to depend to a certain extent on what different filmmakers bring to the party. Take Scott Derrickson, the director of Doctor Strange, which is one of my favorite Marvel movies in recent years. He is an evangelical Christian, and he brought a certain spiritual curiosity to this movie. He explores the idea that reality is much more complicated than what we can see through the lens of science, for instance. So materialistic reductionism, the idea that we're just matter and nothing more, that's not what we see in this movie. Or Black Panther, one of the biggest movies of last year and still in theaters now, raking in money. This is a movie that explores moral themes around racial justice and national responsibility that resonated with a lot of people. So Avengers Infinity War, one way to look at it is through the lens of the ideology of the villain Thanos, who views the world through the lens of a Malthusian worldview. He sees the universe as overpopulated and threatened by too many people, and he wants to wipe out half of the population everywhere in existence for the well-being of the other half. This is obviously a culture of death worldview that's contrary to our Catholic beliefs.
So this guy Thanos, who's this great villain, he's apparently read The Population Bomb.
Remember
the book by Paul Ehrlich?
Ehrlich.
It's been debunked so many times, but people still believe the world is overpopulated and it's going to be.
Paul Ehrlich still believes it.
I know, poor Paul Ehrlich. It doesn't matter how many things he gets wrong, he insists that they're right or they're about to be right. The great panic of the late 60s, early 70s about overpopulation that never came to pass. So I like this, that the villain believes this kind of artifact of history idea that the world is overpopulated. There's too many people. And so his solution is what? He's going to kill half of them?
Right. So these movies for the last 6 years, at least since the original Avengers in 2012, written and directed by Joss Whedon, have revolved around these powerful artifacts in the Marvel Universe called Infinity Stones. And each of them by themselves is really powerful. The Tesseract Cube is one. That Stone of the Vision's forehead is one. Doctor Strange's amulet that he uses to manipulate time is one. But it turns out that if you collect all six, you can construct something called the Infinity Gauntlet. And if you have that, you're basically omnipotent and you can do whatever you want. And that's what Thanos wants to do. And he doesn't want to rule the galaxy or destroy the galaxy like other villains. He just wants to wipe out half of all life. And his own daughter, not his real daughter, but the woman that he raised as his daughter, Gamora, who's played by Zoe Saldana, who's one of the Guardians of the Galaxy, she lived on a planet whose people were poor, and Thanos says that he saved her by killing her people and rescuing her. But she says even though they were poor, they were happy. And so there's a little tiny bit of an answer here to that kind of population bomb Malthusian worldview. To me, it's not nearly enough. So in spite of all the nice things that we've been saying about it, I found Avengers Infinity War really wanting on many levels. But I do appreciate these little glimpses of something that could have been a much stronger pro-life message.
Okay, so that's fascinating, I'm glad to hear that. I'm going to share something with you, too, that just before we move on from the population bomb. Did you know that a few years ago, the New York Times reviewed their own journalism about overpopulation in the 60s and 70s and said they had gotten it wrong? I felt really good for them doing that. That's great to hear.
One of the best and most winsome things that you can find on any worldview and any angle of political ideology is the capacity for honest self-criticism. When someone can look at their own intellectual history and their own statements and say, we got this wrong, that's a sign that they're, you know, not as far from the kingdom as they could be.
Amen, brother. Okay, so if you've given us then the kind of positive side of these massive superhero movies, that they can, especially in the hands of the right director, they can give us a window on a world of high morals, actually, and of openness to goodness and holy things. What's the other side of the story about these big giant movies?
So they can also just focus our attention on disaster and spectacle and violence and nihilism. And in the case of Infinity War, you've got a movie from the writer-director team of Civil War and some earlier Marvel movies, Anthony and Joe Russo, and the screenwriters Stephen McFeely and Christopher Marcus. And I don't think that these guys are interested in asking the really deep questions in the way that they could be. So you've got a movie that's got lots and lots of action and noise and violence and a huge body count in the service of much less substance than it could possibly be. And in the end, I feel frustrated by the movie because it does the same thing that all the other Marvel movies have done, which is it gives you this big effect by writing a check that the next movie has to pay. These movies don't ever resolve. They don't ever come to a conclusion. And this one is no different. So people are going to leave the theater feeling like their minds are blown, but it's all just an ad to get you to the theaters to watch the next one.
Which has a certain kind of genius to it, but as a marketing ploy, but is artistically unsatisfying. I was reading you kind of compared it to the Mission Impossible movies, where it's also a big, huge, giant franchise, Mission Impossible, but each story ends. It comes to an end.
In this day and age, I really appreciate that. It's one thing on television to constantly be raising questions that are never quite answered. Joss Whedon has talked about that. He's worked in television and in movies. It's another thing when you're going to the theater once every few months and you're plunking down your $10, your $12 to sit there for two and a half, close to 3 hours. You want to walk out with questions having been answered, and Marvel isn't delivering that, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like Moby Dick or the great literature. It doesn't end with a cliffhanger for the next installment in the franchise. There's a kind of violation of the basic principle of storytelling there, where you're insisting, no, this story just goes on and on and on and on.
I think so. it's something that works on the small screen. It's something that movies used to do in like serials, like half hour serials. Like you would go to the theater every Saturday in the 40s and, you know, Zorro or Batman would have another half hour adventure. But then, you know, you come back the next Saturday for the next installment. It was like television.
Yeah.
When you're talking about feature films, there's a different expectation. And Marvel, I think, really is doing something that I personally find fundamentally unsatisfying. Lots of people obviously feel different.
888-318-7884 is the number. We got more movies to talk about, but I did want to take some time to talk about Avengers Infinity War and this whole superhero genre with Stephen Gradonis, the very fine movie critic for the National Catholic Register, and as we said before, a member of the New York Film Critics Circle. 888-318-7884, that number. How much, I wonder, Deacon, are we... is just the basic aesthetic principle that a thing is to be beautiful is violated in modern movie making, that it's that we've replaced the idea of beauty or the seeking after beauty with the idea of it's more of a roller coaster ride? Or is that not an important concern, because roller coasters are good too?
I think here of a great line from Pope Pius XII in a document that I love. It's very dear to my heart. It's a pair of addresses that he gave in 1955 to the Italian film industry, his addresses on the ideal film. If you Google ideal film Pius XII, it'll come right up. And he talks about how one of the things that movies can do is just give people who are worn out and tired at the end of a hard day something to relax with, and just divergence and a diversion and entertainment. And he says there's nothing wrong with that, and he has this line that he loves. He says, because man has shallows as well as depths.
Oh wow. what a great line.
He goes on, of course, to say, Dull, however, is the man who cannot add depth to his thoughts and so forth. But we don't have to be deep and meaningful all the time. It's okay just to watch something that's, you know, flash and sparkle and boom and laughter, just relax and enjoy yourself. That's okay.
Go ahead.
But then there is this question of, is it too much? Or do we get to the point where we're no longer able to transcend that shallowness and go out into the depths? Are we bored by a movie that wants to challenge us to think, that asks us to stay with an idea, or that doesn't, you know, hang explosions and shiny things in front of us every 5 minutes?
Right. I have to say, at least one thing you can say about the movies too, at least it's still a social experience. So much of our media experiences are antisocial now. But I am being unfair to the callers, because there's a lot of people who have called and want to talk with you. And we got to take a break, and then we're going to come back and take these calls. 888-318-7884 is the number. Deacon Stephen Gradonis is our guest. We're talking movies. We'll be right back with that after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Bishop James Wall from the Diocese of Gallup, New Mexico. Keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
What difference does it make who or what you worship or what you believe? Sharing the faith used to make some people mad because it challenged their own strong beliefs. Today, it makes a lot of people yawn because they don't have strong beliefs about anything. Religious indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates modern culture. This is Matt Nelson, and in my new book, Just Whatever, I'll take down the building blocks of religious indifference one by one. We'll look at the different kinds of indifference you tend to encounter in your friends and family members to see where they come from and why they're seductive. What you believe matters. Find out why and what to do about it in my new book, Just Whatever. You can order your copy of Just Whatever by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls tools free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the Great Big Friday Show here on Catholic Answers Live. And we're talking with Deacon Stephen Gradonis about movies. And if you have questions or comments, or would like to discuss movies with a man who is both prepared theologically and in terms of his appreciation and understanding of media, Deacon Stephen Gradonis is the perfect guy to talk with. 888-318-7884, the number. And I'll remind you, you can read his reviews at the National Catholic Register, 888-318-7884, the number here. Let's go to another Stephen. Stephen in East Jordan, Michigan, listening on 90.9 FM. You are on with Deacon Stephen Gradonis. Your question, please.
Hello, Deacon. Thanks for taking my call. I just tuned into the show about 10 minutes ago. I just wanted to call and express I was very dissatisfied with the new Star Trek series. I know it wasn't a movie per se, but many of these series, you know, are kind of like just 10 episodes or more, nothing more than a big, long movie. But it was unprecedented for Star Trek and their new series where you had to stream it to watch it, which was new. Mm-hmm. And then they had, you know, homosexuality like front and center and glamorized and really focused in on in the series. But
so let me just get this straight, Stephen. This is Star Trek Discovery, the new one where you got to get CBS's online service in order to watch it.
I actually signed up for the online service and I watched the first two episodes, and ever since then I've just been paying that monthly bill and not catching up. I keep meaning to catch up with it, but I just haven't had the time.
That you are the perfect customer for CBS.
Am I not?
They must love that. Okay, so Stephen, your question for Deacon Gradonis about the show, though.
Okay, I guess how much more as Catholics do we tolerate before we just tune in? It's more and more prevalent every movie I watch anymore.
Right. Wonderful question, sure. Stephen. Great okay. question. Thank you. Deacon Gradonis.
It is a really great question, and I have written specifically about Star Trek in connection with religious and moral issues, in connection with the worldview of the series at Decent Films, and I would recommend those articles to you. You know, Star Trek was founded from the beginning on the vision of Gene Roddenberry, which was a secular, humanist, progressive vision of the future. There are aspects of his vision that I admire and that I like very much, and there are obviously aspects of it that I have a big problem with as a Catholic. On the one hand, for instance, he showed the world in the 1960s a world in which you could have a white male captain on the bridge of a ship with a black female officer, you know, right next to him, a young Chinese officer, a Russian ensign. This was very challenging and interesting at the time, and you know, there are other interesting and positive aspects of the moral worldview at work in Star Trek, but there are also negative aspects. Religion has always been viewed with skepticism and often with outright dismissal and rejection on Star Trek. Not always. Star Trek's engagement with religion has been mixed, and at times it's been treated with much more respect as part of the human experience. In particular, the Star Trek series Deep Space Nine dealt with religion in some very interesting, complicated ways. With regard to homosexuality, of course, we are living in a world in which whatever is your sexual orientation is considered to be part of fundamentally who you are. That's the mainstream ideology now, and that's going to be reflected more and more in the entertainment that we imbibe. So we have to be aware of the fact that as Catholics, we hold a worldview that is in some ways at odds with the world in which we live. And so there are always going to be tensions between us and the people around us and the mainstream culture around us. So when you watch a movie or a television show where you're going to see some things that you agree with and some things that you disagree with, you're going to have to make a calculation. You're going to have to ask yourself, first of all, not, you know, is this absolutely pure and perfect and there's nothing in it that I take any exception to? That's a standard that's just not going to work in any area of life. You know, if you insist on having perfect friends and only going to a perfect church where you never hear anything you disagree with and only eating perfect food or drinking perfectly pure water with no impurities or anything that could possibly be bad for you, you're going to die unchurched and friendless and quickly. On the other hand, there are foods and churches and friends who are going to do you more harm than good.
Yeah.
So you need to look at each of these things on a case-by-case basis and say to yourself, what is the overall message here? Is this overall something in which I find positive value, or is this overall something that's kind of confronting me and that's contradicting my faith? And you need to avoid the two extremes of, on the one hand, just accepting everything and saying, oh, it doesn't affect me. I know what I believe, and so I can just watch absolutely everything and there's no moral problems here at all. And then on the other hand, of just rejecting everything that's not totally aligned with our belief as Catholics.
Stephen in Michigan, how does that answer strike you?
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Can I piggyback?
Welcome.
I want to piggyback on Stephen's question a little bit, Deacon. Not to be obnoxious, but I don't want anybody to call you. I just want to talk to you myself the whole hour. But it strikes me that that the answer gets even more complicated when we're paying for things. Like and please correct me if you think I'm a nut. But well, I am a lot of times a nut. But I think paying for services myself, like HBO, for example, that that produce wonderful content, but also produce what's essentially pornography is wrong. That you shouldn't do that. Correct me, please, if you think I'm being too blanket in my judgment.
So the question of boycotting services when you perceive that there are problematic aspects to it, and then to some extent, you're supporting things that we disagree with, is governed in Catholic moral theology by a principle called the law of double effect. This is when you're doing something that's not intrinsically wrong, and it has consequences downstream that are both positive and negative. And so the principles governing this have to do with, first of all, the proportionality of the harm that's caused to the good that's caused, and the immediacy of the effects. In other words, am I doing something that's having immediate bad effects and good effects further downstream, or first that come the good effects and the bad effects are downstream? And the proportionality of the good and the bad. How does the good weigh compared to the bad? There's no way that I can give you a blanket answer on something like subscribing to HBO. I can point out that absolutely everything that we do in life, and especially in our corporate world, every time you go to the store and buy a product, a branded product, you're buying something that's advertised on a particular network. And that network has a particular editorial policy. And they're going to be supporting and giving money, donating to some good causes and some bad causes. You know, it would practically be impossible to go to the store and come home with your groceries and not wind up buying something that in some way could be traced to a company that's going to be donating money to Planned Parenthood. I'm not saying you should never boycott anything, not by any means, but we need to recognize that all of our actions have good consequences and bad consequences. And so we really need to decide these things on a case-by-case basis in terms of the overall good effect and the bad effect. For me, one of my fundamental outlooks when I look at the question of buying a ticket for a movie, you know, people say to me, well, you know, how can you support a movie like Queen of Katwe when it's distributed by Disney and Disney supports these bad things?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know, my answer to that is, if we don't support good movies, then we're going to just get bad movies. And I think that good movies do more good for the culture than, you know, the idea that we might get another movie like Queen of Katwe.
Yeah.
I think that's a better thing than the fact that, you know, pennies from my – and, you know, we're supporting the people who work in our local theater, and we're supporting other people who are working and doing honest work for a living. Some pennies of that are going to wind up being donated to Planned Parenthood. It's true. But I think that that's sufficiently remote effect that from the principle of double effect, I would say it's justified.
Oh, very fascinating. How bad would you feel about a person if they had only just in the last few minutes heard of the Queen of Katwe? Like if that person had not heard of it, would you feel bad about that person?
No, because I'm thrilled for the opportunity to be able to bring this great movie to people's attention. You know, the star of the movie, David Oyelowo, is a devout Christian, and he put Christian themes into the movie. I reviewed it on Decent Films. It was one of my top 10 films in the year that it was released. And if somebody hasn't heard of Queen of Katwe, then mission accomplished. They've heard of it now.
All right. I'm not going to name who that person is, but it was a hypothetical if there was a person who had not heard of it. Deacon Stephen Graydonis is our guest. He is a member of the New York Film Critics Circle. He's a permanent deacon of the Catholic Archdiocese of Newark, and he is the film reviewer for the National Catholic Register. We're talking movies, and there are more movies to talk about. There's a whole bunch of interesting things. The Devil and Father Amorth, A Quiet Place. We want to talk about that. Paul, Apostle of Christ. We'll get to that and your calls right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Ready and waiting for your call today on Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed a list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answers' brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to
why
a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Tonight, 11 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking movies with Deacon Stephen Graydonis, movie critic, and very helpful in helping us think through the moral considerations of our media consumption. 888-318-7884 is the number. I have not been good about getting to call, so I'm going to go to Jessica in Modesto, California, listening on to EWTN on Sirius Satellite Radio. Jessica, you're on with Deacon Stephen Graydonis. Your question, please.
Hi. Hi, Deacon. Can you hear me?
Yes, Jessica. What's up?
Okay, so I have been listening to you for many years, and I go back and forth. I usually agree with you, but I was glad to hear you say that you were happy that the New York Times was rescinding something that they had said. I wanted to give you a chance to do the same about Coco.
Okay.
Coco is the best, and I've watched it a billion times, and I can't get enough of it, and I think it's so good and so moving for kids, and it's just so much like deeper than so many animated films, and just wanted to give you a chance to, yeah, to fix that.
Okay. Okay. So here's what I'm prepared to say about Coco. First of all, as a film critic, I want to make absolutely clear, I'm not here to tell anyone what to think. I don't want anyone to agree with every review that I write or everything that I say. I'm here to offer you what I think are some important facts and to give you some perspective on those facts, to give you an informed and responsible construal of those facts. Of course, I think I'm right about absolutely every movie, but it's okay to disagree with me. I'm not the Pope of movies. There is no Pope of movies. Even the Pope isn't the Pope of movies. And I do make mistakes from time to time. I think that I was unfair to Moana, for instance. I gave that movie, I think, a C+ at the time. And after watching it more than once, I'm inclined to think that I judged it too harshly. On the other hand, sometimes I like movies too much and I realize later that they aren't as good as I thought. The Star Wars prequels are an example of that. Loved them, and it took me years to realize their shortcomings. So is it possible that I'm wrong about Coco? Yes, it is, but I don't think so. So first of all, let me just say there are things about Coco that I love. I love its celebration of Mexican and Latin American culture. I love the music. I love the visuals. I love its emphasis on family. I love the way that it celebrates extended family and honoring and valuing the elderly. So Miguel's great-grandmother, Mama Coco, there's a great line where he says in the beginning when he's introducing his family, she has trouble remembering things, but it's good to talk to her anyway. And that is more than just a heartwarming line. There's this emphasis in the film on emotional connections with the elderly and on remembering those who have gone before and those that we've lost. There are also very moving themes in the film having to do with the relationship between memory and music. Many things about the film that I love, and I understand why people love it. As a Catholic, I am put off not by the imaginative portrayal of the world of the dead, that you die and you go not to heaven or hell or purgatory, but you go to a land where people are walking around as animated skeletons until the day that you're forgotten on earth and then you fade away in this land. I'm okay with that. There's room in imagination for elaborating on reality, and we can imagine that God might have made the world differently than he did. But this is a film set in an ostensibly Catholic culture where we see crucifixes and churches and priests in collars and nuns, at least in the movies of that world, and Our Lady of Guadalupe on the wall. And there is no hope for an afterlife. There is no prayer. And when you fade away in the land of the dead, they tell us that that is the final death. And it's completely a materialistic outlook on what happens to you after you die. In this film, in this culture, I want to register my dissent for that. Does it ruin the film for me? No. I gave it a B-. I recommend it on the basis of all the other things that I said, but I think it's important to realize that there is this secular element in the film that is contrary to our faith, and it actually portrays the afterlife in a way that we need to realize goes against what we believe. So that's my answer. I'm sorry if it doesn't entirely satisfy you.
Jessica?
Well, I just thought that Hector says he doesn't know, and, like, he's obviously not – he didn't live the best life, so he's not, let's say, a spiritual guru. I see the film more as a whimsical idea of some kind of a purgatorial state. These seem to be good people for the most part. I mean, maybe not. I don't know. Like, it's obviously not following what we believe about purgatory, but we don't know a lot about that.
Sure.
Stage. And I agree, there's not overt prayer, but I don't know. It gets kids at least thinking about the afterlife and thinking about family and thinking about bigger things than, you know, trolls, which I like trolls.
So, And that's all fine. And, you know, to the pure, all things are pure. And it's certainly possible to enjoy the positive aspects without focusing as much on the problematic issues. One of the occupational hazards that comes with seeing an awful lot of films is that you wind up focusing like a laser on things that a lot of people will gloss over. And there's nothing wrong with glossing over some of these things. I am not able to do it. And so I stand by my review.
Jessica, thanks very, very much. Appreciate the call. 888-318-7884. The number. We're talking movies with the Pope of movies, Deacon Stephen Gardanus.
Not the Pope of movies.
Oh, I must have misheard there. I thought that you had appointed yourself Pope of movies. I'm just kidding you. Let's talk a little bit about religious movies for a moment, if I can, or movies with kind of overt religious themes, because mm-hmm. Jessica started us off in that direction. I suppose sometimes we have a... Well, there's a history of religious movies that are more their religious themes are of a higher quality than the movies themselves. How do you like that for a diplomatic way of saying that sometimes religious movies are corny?
and to an extent, that's true. I think we always have to remember the other side of that equation. As Madeleine L'Engle once said, "If it's bad art, it's bad theology."
I say that because I wanted to ask you about Paul the Apostle of Christ. I did not see it. So I wonder, here's an overtly and quite successful, Christian-themed movie. What's your take?
It's not bad artistically. So this film comes from Affirm Films. It's one of those. It's one of the faith-based imprints. This one is owned by Sony. Writer-director Andrew Hyatt, who also made a movie about Mary, Unseen by Me, Full of Grace. But it's got a great cast. I happen to know the person who cast this movie, and she's a person with Hollywood connections. She got Jim Caviezel to play St. Luke. James Faulkner from Game of Thrones plays the Apostle Paul. It's got Olivia Martinez. It's got John Lynch, Joanna Wally. And it portrays the last days of Paul the Apostle in prison in Rome in around, I think, 68 AD or AD 68. We see Aquila and Priscilla, some of the leading Christian people in Rome, dealing with the persecution, the Neronian persecution in the wake of the Great Fire of Rome. And the screenplay is pretty smart. It's got some interesting themes, and there are a lot of things about it that I liked. As a Catholic, I wanted to see a little bit more of, for instance, the influence of St. Peter in Rome, and whether he is about to be executed with Paul or whether he was executed somewhat earlier. Where are his successors? Where are Linus and Clement and so forth. I felt like the movie, even though it was written and directed by a Catholic, Andrew Wyatt, was maybe being the outlook of it seems to me to be a little bit too evangelical in terms of lacking that hierarchical element or any kind of sacramental or liturgical element. But in spite of that, there are some solid theological and moral themes to the film, and it is pretty well written and well acted, and I did like it.
And I've been hearing, although I just don't do horror movies, but that this movie that John Krasinski made, A Quiet Place, is kind of a pro-life movie. I don't know if you had – was that the take you had on it or
– Absolutely. Absolutely.
Really?
And I thought of A Quiet Place earlier in the show when you talked about the social dimension of going to movies, because it's really interesting when you go to the theaters and you watch this movie with a crowd of people and you watch the silence in the film kind of flow off of the screen and out into the movie theater. People are trying to be really quiet. This is a film. It's a kind of a post-apocalyptic story about an alien invasion and a family played by John Krasinski and his real life wife, Emily Blunt. They have three children in the beginning, two children very, very quickly. An older girl played by Millicent Simmons, who is deaf in real life and her character is deaf. And then a younger son, Noah Jupe. And I found myself reflecting as I was watching the movie, how rarely we see a movie with such a positively portrayed family, with a husband and wife who are so in tune with each other and who as parents sacrifice in such a loving way for their children. And, you know, in the context of the film with these monsters everywhere who will devour you if you make too much noise, that they're being in tune with each other and their ability to use sign language, for instance, because of the daughter's physical disability is obviously important, but it's also just a great portrayal of family life.
That's I'm very happy to hear that because it's interesting what you said to me about the or what you just said about the social aspect of it, because that's that people are responding by being quiet themselves out of either fear of these monsters or just this, the general atmosphere is getting quieter and quieter. That may be with like I just said, I don't really do horror movies and I don't. But that a horror movie really is made for the theater in a way, isn't it? Supposed to be a social experience that we scream together.
I think that it is. There are some movies that are best experienced in the theater, and you know, the when a movie works, when it connects with its audience, the audience becomes a unit, and the fact that there are people around you responding the same way that you do, that does have value, and it's part of the power of cinema as a medium. I should also mention in the film, at an early point in the story, we see that the wife is pregnant, and you know, even though they're living in the apocalypse, this child is welcomed, and life is always good, even in the worst of circumstances.
Wonderful. I have to say, one of the greatest people in the history of the world, who is, I think, so even today still not appreciated for her brilliance and beauty and holiness, is Joan of Arc. And so I want to get you to talk about a couple of Joan of Arc movies when we come back. We got to take a quick break. Stephen Greidanis is our guest, movie critic extraordinaire, and we're going to talk a little bit more about more movies and take your calls after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
We live in an age of indifference. Does truth exist? Maybe. Is there a God? Who knows? Does it matter what religion you believe in? Probably not. If you think so, fine. I'm spiritual, but not religious. Apologist Matt Nelson says this indifference is the great spiritual sickness of our age, a product of the relativism that dominates our culture. And rather than remain indifferent, he did something about it. In his new book, Just Whatever, Matt looks at the different kinds of indifference you likely encounter in your friends and family members, and maybe in yourself, and offers an antidote to the problem that plagues our age. Order your copy of Just Whatever today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know that Catholic Answers Live is on TV? What began as a monthly series on EWTN in April of 2017 is now going to be coming to you on a weekly basis. You can catch Catholic Answers Live TV Saturdays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN, with an encore at 2:30 a.m. on Sundays. We'll also be available soon on Apple TV, Roku, and the Augustine Institute's multimedia platform, Form. Make a point of making Catholic Answers Live TV part of your weekly viewing, and we'll see you on the airwaves.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Wrapping up the work week with just a really fun hour talking about movies with the man who knows, Deacon Stephen Greidanis. I wonder, Deacon, how you feel about being called Deacon? Have you gotten used to it?
It's funny. People were calling me Deacon even before I was ordained. So I was actually used to it by the time that I was ordained. What still is taking a little bit of getting used to is how often people call me Father. And then there's always this moment where I pause and I think, do I correct them or not?
Well, you should probably stop wearing a Roman collar and sitting in a confessional then. I mean, that's probably what's causing some, no? So how is it to be a deacon, though? I mean, it's 2 years, right, that you're a deacon?
I'm on my second year now, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to serve God's church in this ministry. It is something that I felt called to for many, many years, and whether I am serving at the Mass or or preaching, or just handing out food in our church's food pantry, visiting people in the nursing home and bringing them the Eucharist. I feel just very strongly that this is where God has called me to be, and I'm so happy and pleased and thrilled.
Wonderful. Praise God for that. I mean, for those who are not Catholic and may not know, but within the Catholic Church, we have three levels of holy orders, and among them is a deacon, because deacon means different things in different Christian communities.
Yes.
And a deacon preaches at Mass, and a deacon serves in the community, and as which it's like, in many ways, you're like a bridge, kind of, between the clergy and the laity. I don't know if that's the right way to say it. Maybe I'm...
Well, there's something to that, because, you know, we have secular lives, and I have a 9-to-5 job that has nothing to do with religion or movies. And I do walk around wearing street clothes, you know, and then I go to church and I wear vestments and I stand up at the altar and yeah. I have my lines, you know, it's interesting and it's challenging to me to engage my faith and to find God in these very different areas of my life. I knew when I felt called to the diaconate that it was to serve God's church and to help other people, but it was also for the salvation of my own soul. And I find myself very much working out my own salvation with fear and trembling in this ministry.
Wow. And also you get to say when Mass is over. You're the only guy that gets to do it.
That's right. Nobody leaves until I say so.
Right. You're in charge. okay. A movie that is somewhat obscure and is obscure to me, but if I can find it, I want to see it because Joan of Arc is one of my heroes and I think should be one of everybody's heroes. She's that great a saint. Jeanette, The Childhood of Joan of Arc. Am I going to be able to find it, and is it worth seeing?
So earlier in the show, I mentioned that great quote from Pius XII, that man has shallows as well as depths in order to give you permission to watch mindless entertainment from time to time. I want to throw out another quote. This is from pastoral instruction, Communio et Progressio, from the 1970s, which informs us that as Catholics, it is only right that we seek to acquire a truly Catholic taste, lowercase c, one that includes both the traditional and the latest forms of artistic expression, one that appreciates and understands the production of all natures, all nations, all cultures and subcultures. So this is the magisterial quote that tells us that watching movies with subtitles and watching obscure foreign films and art films is also part of our Catholic engagement with culture. So Jeanette, the Childhood of Joan of Arc, is a really weird film. It's one of the most unique films I've ever seen. Mystical theology and musical eclecticism meets hagiography and headbanging in this
wow.
film. It is a musical, and it starts out very naturalistic with Joan as a 9-year-old girl saying her prayers in a very pious way, singing to God as a young peasant girl might, just wandering the French countryside, but also struggling with the problem of evil, with the suffering of the world, with the suffering of war, with the fact that after 14 centuries of Christianity, there's still so much evil and suffering in the world. And did Jesus actually accomplish anything? And if you're very literate and very knowledgeable of your Catholic literature, you might recognize eventually that these lyrics come from the writings of the French Catholic poet Charles Peguy, P-E-G-U-Y, with a Q accent over the E. And Charles Peguy, who was an atheist at first, he wrote an epic series of poems on Joan of Arc. He later became a devout Catholic and wrote more about her, and this musical draws on both of these. And the film by Bruno Dumont really engages Peguy's theological vision in a really extraordinary way. I have never seen a film like it. And in spite of the fact that the music eventually takes on everything from rock and roll to electronica to headbanging heavy metal, I found it to be really respectful and a moving experience.
Oh, but it was originally in French and it's dubbed or it's subtitled or?
Oh, subtitle, absolutely.
So it's going to be hard to find. I got to look around for it.
Yes, it's only playing. It's playing a few. If you go to my review at the National Catholic Register, there is a link to a website where you can look for play dates. It's playing at most like a week or two, and here and there. So you'll be very, but eventually it will come out on streaming and Blu-ray and so forth, and then everybody will be able to catch up with it at some point.
All right,
not that everyone will.
No, of course no. But I'm intrigued because, you know, with her visions of St. Margaret and St. Catherine and St. Michael and all that, Joan's life is weird, but weird in the most wonderful way. So I'm glad they made a weird movie about her. I'm really looking forward to it if I can find it. You noted to me earlier that the Passion of Joan of Arc is 90 years old this year.
Yes, this is a film that every listener should know. The Passion of Joan of Arc, from 1928, classic silent film. Carl Dreyer, one of the 45 films in the Vatican Film List, one of the 15 films in the subcategory of religion, one of the most famous silent films ever made, crowned by one of the greatest performances ever recorded on film, Renée Falconetti as Joan of Arc. This is exclusively concerned with her trial, and it's a movie that is a challenge to watch artistically because of how Dreyer breaks the rules of cinematic storytelling in order to kind of throw you off and make you not anticipate and stand back, but kind of sweep you along in these series of images as Joan's interlocutors, these theologians and judges of the church, grill her, and as she's so weary and she's so exhausted and fearful, and she just tries to deal with it all. And you really kind of go through Joan's passion with her. I have never seen a film that brings me spiritually into the experience of Good Friday as much as The Passion of Joan of Arc. Oh, and it's new. There's a new Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection. So.
Ah, thank you very much for that recommendation. I will look for that. Another religious movie or religious themed movie. I think it's also in limited release in different places. But you'll have to tell me the Devil and Father Amorth is not in wide release, is it?
You know, where I am, it's in theaters, but I live near New York City, so I'm not really sure exactly how wide the release is. But it's a film that has something of a high profile, only because of the director. So William Friedkin is forever known as the director of The Exorcist, and now he's made this documentary about the world's best-known exorcist, Father Amorth, the author of books that you can buy from Ignatius Press. He was an exorcist of the Diocese of Rome until his recent death in 2016. And he is seen here performing an exorcism on a woman who is called in the film, she's called Christina, whether that's her real name or not. And we see interviews with another, with a brother and sister, who the sister was successfully exorcised by Father Amorth, we're told. And then we have interviews with a whole bunch of talking head psychologists and medical experts, and even Bishop Robert Barron, the auxiliary bishop of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles. So there's some interesting stuff in the film and also some head-scratching stuff. And I wish I could recommend it more than I can, because in the end, there are too many things about the movie that I have reservations about, starting with the fact that I just can't get past the fact that the woman who's being exorcised, when we hear her voice, it's been digitally tweaked. There's a audio effect called chorus effect that makes you sound like you're a possessed person in a horror movie. And that's what they've done.
So that takes the air of authenticity off of it then.
It absolutely does. You know, I was watching it with my 14-year-old daughter, and as soon as she spoke, my daughter said to me, "Is that really what she sounded like?" And it sounded fake to me, fake enough that I put it in my review. Then I heard an actual audio clip from the original audio. There was a piece on this that ran in I can't remember which online journal. I'll think of it in a minute. You can hear it online, the original audio. And she sounds like a woman who's just talking in a guttural voice, but a totally normal sounding woman. That's not to say she wasn't possessed, whether she was or she wasn't. I can't speak to that. But when you watch the movie, you're seeing Hollywood. You're not seeing reality, and that's unfortunate.
I can see that. Yeah. So let's just take a little score. you did recommend, am I correct, A Quiet Place? Or you said that's worth seeing?
Oh, absolutely. Strongly.
And both of the Joan of Arc movies, The Passion of Joan of Arc and Jeanette, The Childhood of Joan of Arc?
Absolutely. Avengers Infinity War, if you're a fan of the Marvel franchise, you're going to be there.
And Paul, Apostle of Christ, you also gave that another
recommend. Good movie.
Very good. Deacon Stephen Graydonis has been our guest. Deacon, thank you so much for an hour of movies. Do you think we could do like a summer movie preview at some point? Have you on just preview the
movies?
That'd
be great, Si.
Okay, very good. May we have your blessing before we go?
The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you. The Lord be gracious unto you and give you his peace now and forever in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Thank you again, Deacon. I really appreciated that hour.
Thank you so much.
Well, we've done it. We've come to the end of the work week. Hope you're home by now. Hope the traffic was all right. Jesus Christ is the light of the nations. And we'll see you next time on Catholic Answers Live.